Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health in that workforce, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again here on Podcast Friday with my amazing co-host, Al McDonald. Al, what are you saying? Happy Friday to you.
Yeah, very excited for our guest today because we met this individual quite a few weeks back and finally have managed to get around to having him on the podcast. So very excited about our guest and what he is doing. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, well, you bring up a good point about where we met this person because it was our first Tech Talent North event. And just by hanging out with the likes of Joanna Kimmich and Joshua Siegel and Amanda Small, I think we got to meet pretty much everyone that was at the conference. And of course, our guest was one of them. And we talked about it right then and there that we were going to have a podcast about this. So joining us today is Corey Chadwick, who is the founder and CEO of The Mental Gym. Corey is a proud dad, husband, a mental fitness and performance trainer, and just like we have exercise for our bodies, the mental gym is for your mind. Corey believes in a world where people are mentally healthy and fit because we're proactive instead of being reactive with our mental health. We're consistently growing better as people, leaders, and feel truly connected to each other as human beings, and we show up at our best when it matters most and create a ripple effect that makes everyone better. He's passionate about helping organizations and their people live their best lives, not only at work, but at home as well. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's not about being a 6 or a 7. This is all about living your 10. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Rob and Al, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. Looking forward to it.
Well, I pretty much knew about 30 seconds into meeting you that I wanted to chat more because you're a very engaging person. And I think what you're doing is very, very interesting. And of course, running a company ourselves, but also being a broker and dealing with a lot of corporate clients. And I think you'll agree, Corey, that people are more and more interested in this type of thing. And it's very top of mind. And I can see why people were kind of clamoring to talk to you down at Tech Talent North. But we'd like to kind of start at the beginning and find out a little bit more about you, a little more about the mental gym. Can you tell us about your career journey? Where did this start? Did you always want to be this entrepreneur and get involved in mental health and this sort of thing? So if you can take us kind of from as early as you want to go to the current time.
Yeah, this wasn't something I was thinking about at a young age. I can tell you what I was thinking about quite young was, you guys know that feeling like you've got potential and probably more potential than you're realizing, but you don't know what to do with it or what direction to point yourself in or what it even looks like, right? Or who do you trust to help show you the way? That was me. And it was frustrating for me when I realized that school isn't really helping you realize your potential. School's not helping you live your best life at work or at home. It's helping you get by and be fine. And this is not a knock on school. It's just that scale from 1 to 10 that you mentioned, helping us live that 6, 7, but not our tens. So that was a really important theme in my life. Where mental health did become a part of my life was around my teenage years, my mom was struggling with mental health. And I think she did a pretty good job of trying to hide it from us. Moms will do that. And also there was a huge stigma around mental health then. I mean, even now there's still a stigma. We need to get rid of that. And quite frankly, I think it's ridiculous that there is any sort of a stigma around it, but there is. But certainly we're talking 30 years ago. There definitely was. So I really had no idea how much my mom was struggling. I knew it was getting worse and worse and worse, but I didn't know how bad it was until I get a phone call one day telling me that mom tried to take her life. And it floored me. It rocked me. Nothing prepares you for that. And a short time later, mom tried again. And I remember this feeling of like helplessness that there wasn't anything I could do to help her or to save her. And unfortunately, a little while after that, she went through with it. she did it. It was severe depression that just kept getting worse. And she obviously felt like she was in a place where that was her answer. And it broke my heart. I was lost. I was in a low place. I was scared too. I had been through some kind of tough times already in life. So I was under no illusions that life was all sunshine and rainbows all the time. You know, my parents split up for the first time when I was quite young and were kind of together and apart and together and apart. When I was 16 years old, I contracted this freak rare brain virus that took doctors 7 months just to diagnose. So I spent that whole time with uncertainty, not knowing if I was going to live or die. And I just kind of say this because, again, I didn't think that life was all sunshine and rainbows, but still with my mom, that was rough. And then it was really right around that time or shortly after that, that my dad began his struggles with addiction. And addiction really kind of took over his life. And that was incredibly painful as well. He was the guy that I looked up to my whole life. You know, he was my guy. And to see him become a very different version of himself was tough. And these are the two people who had the biggest influence on my life, obviously, growing up. And the thought that this could be genetic terrified me. These are the people who I looked up to, and yet now I'm terrified to turn out like either one of them. And so I realized I kind of have three choices here. And really, they're the same three choices we all have today and then and forever. It's one, we can kind of just cross our fingers and hope everything works out and somehow we'll be okay and then nothing bad happens to us. And I'm just like, that's not a strategy. Second option was to hope nothing really happens, but if something does, be reactive. If something bad happens, be reactive and hope that I can somehow get back to being normal, functional, living a normal kind of life. Again, this didn't seem like a strategy to me. And the third option was to be proactive, was to get mentally healthy and fit. That just made a lot more sense to me. And so a little bit at a time, one little improvement at a time, one little adjustment at a time, I started just kind of rewiring and upgrading how I thought, how I made decisions and behaved, just really improving how my mind worked and my brain worked. And over time, all these little adjustments were compounding. And that's what happens. There's a real compounding effect here. And people were really noticing. I was incredibly happy in my life. My business was taking off. I wasn't in this business at the time. I actually used to be in the restaurant and bar business. My relationships were amazing. Just over and over, people were seeing these huge changes. Like, what have you figured out that we haven't figured out? I kept hearing that from people. I wasn't thinking about sharing it with anybody at this point. Still, it was just for my own benefit. And what I recognized was these two major themes in my life. One, wanting to become that best version of myself for myself and for other people, but living my best life. And two, none of that happens if I don't have optimal mental health. If I'm struggling with my mental health, none of that's going to happen. What I realized very quickly is those two roads converged into one. They just really became the same thing. And a lot of the tools that I was using for my mental health were helping me be the best version of myself. A lot of the tools that I was using to help me be the best version of myself were improving my mental health. It really wasn't until my first son was born that I started doing something with this, sharing it with other people. I'd been developing it for quite a while and living it myself, but I had a mentor who was really on me about this for a while. And he's saying, you've got something here you need to be sharing with people. You're going to help a lot of people. Please share it with people. And I was kind of, I don't want to say dismissive of it, but just kind of taking it for granted, I think, for a while. But I remember very clearly, my first son was born. He's about to turn 8 years old right now, and we're in the delivery room. And I think every parent probably remembers that feeling of like that responsibility that hits you of like, holy crap, I'm responsible for another human life right now. And you know, I hope I don't mess this up. But I also remember this feeling of, I want the world to be a better place for him. I want my son to grow up in a better world, and recognizing that I had something here that could contribute to that better world. And so now it became a sense of almost like a responsibility to do something with it. And so I got to work on sharing it with people, trying to figure out the best way to share it with people and the best way to work with people on this. I'll kind of fast forward a few years in the journey, always looking for that better way. I was in the middle of a CrossFit class one day, and I know people have different opinions about CrossFit itself, but what I really loved about it was the group atmosphere. It was incredibly supportive, engaging, exciting. The energy was just fantastic in there. And you've got people from different walks of life and different experiences and all of these things about them that might be different, but they come together for this thing. They show up for themselves and they show up for each other, and we're all better for it. And I loved that. That energy was just fantastic. And I remember in the middle of a workout one day, the light bulb goes off and I drop my barbell and I think, whoa, we're doing this for our bodies. Why aren't we doing this for our minds? We need this for our minds. And there are so many parallels between physical health and the way we think about physical health and mental health. And that's really what got the mental gym started. So again, just like we have exercise for our bodies, the mental gym is for your mind. It's not therapy. It's not reactive care. And that's something I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more as well. But this is proactive mental health, moving people from good to great. And that's what we do.
Corey, we definitely want to hear more about that. But can I ask you, how old were you when your mom passed away?
21.
21. Yeah, that's very young. That's rough. So
It was tough.
Yeah, I'm sorry for your loss. And yeah,
thank you.
This topic of mental health resonates with our family. And Al's probably heard some of this before, maybe not all of it. But my sister had gotten divorced. She had two kids with her first husband and got divorced and met a really nice guy. Never got remarried, but really nice guy. And they had my nephew, my youngest nephew. And unfortunately, you know, they were going through some tough times and he was struggling with some mental health issues and he had moved out. And, you know, my sister was quite worried about him and sent the Barrie police to do a health check and they had found he had hung himself.
Oh, sorry.
And the impact of that, not only on the family, but on young Michael, my nephew. And I'll never forget, we're going to one of Michael's soccer games and they had planned some sort of father and son thing. And this is when my dad was alive. And Michael was so young, and I'm going back to that point, I'm reliving it, and that's why you'll hear a bit of emotion in my voice. He had asked, Grandpa, would you be my dad?
Oh, wow.
For that day. And it was so heartbreaking for this kid. So when you talk about suicide, and it's just so impactful. So it's something that I'm so glad the stigmas are getting removed. They're still not completely gone, but the fact that we're talking about this. And then the other part that resonates, and I wanted to ask you a question because it's something we never were able to figure out with my brother. So my brother, from the time he was 50, he passed away at 59. He had really given up on life, suffered with obesity, was in and out of hospital. I remember for his 50th birthday, I walked into the hospital and we knew there was issues. We didn't know the extent. And I walk in and he's crying. And I said, why didn't you reach out for help? Because we didn't know as a family it was that bad. And he's sitting there crying, saying, I don't know. So there was obviously some mental health issues there and he hid it very well from everybody for a long time. What are you doing? And if this is outside the scope of what you do, I mean, that's fine, but it's a selfish question because I'm always trying to figure out what could we have done differently because he was hiding it and people get good at hiding things that they're struggling with. What would you say to some?
Yeah, I will say that it is a little bit outside of my scope of expertise in that I'm not a therapist and I'm not a mental health counselor, right? We help people get mentally healthy and fit. This goes back to the stigma, right? People don't feel like they can talk about it. I mean, I hear this from executives and CEOs a lot too, is that they're like, I can't admit that I'm seeing a therapist because I'm going to be judged. People are going to think I can't do my job properly.
100%.
I can't perform, you know, I'm going to crack and then I'm going to have to leave and all of this. And like, the truth is those people might be better suited to be leading your company than other people who aren't addressing their mental health, but the people feel like they can't talk about it. I mean, it's a whole other ballgame when you are really struggling and in crisis mode. How do you ask for help? Who do you ask? What do you ask? And yeah, my heart breaks for anybody in that situation who is suffering quietly, but really, really suffering.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when my mom passed thinking that, like, I've never been in the headspace that she was in, obviously. So I can't really resonate with that. Like, I really tried. I'm like, what must somebody be thinking or feeling, and for so long to be in that situation? But I will say it gave me a ton of perspective. Like, I remember thinking, and this is not really answering your question, but it just kind of a bit of a tangent if I can for a second, that I remember feeling that, like, this is the lowest it's ever been for me, and it wasn't a pleasant place to be in. But it's funny when you're living, not funny, but when you're living kind of like that average, fine, not great, but kind of fine kind of life, you don't really have perspective on it. But when you're out of that zone and you're kind of in that low spot, now you do have perspective. What I recognize is, and I remember asking myself this question, I was like, if this is the worst it can get, if there's a worst, there has to be a best, right? Like, that just makes sense. I'm not a physics major or anything like that, but like, that made sense to me. If there's a worst, there has to be a best. So if this is the worst it can get, what's the best it can get? I want that. That's when the idea of living your 10 came to me. It wasn't about some perfect life or every day is going to be the greatest day ever. It's not that. It's just recognizing that if there's a worst, there has to be a best. If there's a one or a two, there has to be a nine or a 10. Well, that's what I want. I'm a big believer that our greatest adversity can be our greatest teachers and our greatest gifts. Everything that's happened with my mom and my dad, absolutely, it was painful. I don't wish it on anybody, but I got to say, I'm entirely grateful for it all because it shaped me. It set me on a different trajectory in my life. all the lives that are being changed now are a result of that happening, the impact that it's had on who I am as a person, who I am as a husband. This work has helped me immensely as a husband in my relationship with my wife. I am a way better father because of it. And these are things that are really important to me. And I'm saying this not because it's the answer to your question about what do you do with people in those situations? Because again, I don't, and we don't really work with people who are in those situations. I kind of group it into one of three groups. We're all in one of three groups and buckets, if you will, kind of red, orange, and green. Red is what we're describing here. People who are really struggling, this physical health, mental health, you can use it for both parts of the conversation here. Really struggling, do need help, aren't moving out of that red zone on their own. They need help. What's happening there is it's very reactive. It's waiting until something's really bad, really struggling, saying, I need help. What do I do now? Hopefully asking for help, because probably for every person that is raising their hand and saying, I need help, which is fantastic that they are, you've probably got another 5 or 10 people in the exact same situation who aren't asking for help. And that's a problem. And to what you said before, there's this feeling of, I mean, when you're depressed, when you're struggling with mental health in that way, when you're burnt out, there's a feeling of apathy that comes with it, feeling of helplessness. It doesn't matter what I do, nothing's going to change my situation. We don't want anyone in that situation ever. And the truth is, I believe a lot of that is preventable. I remember when I set out on my mental health journey, I had this kind of conversation with myself and I said, okay, if this is genetic, I have to beat it. And I don't know if you can beat mental illness, but I'm going to try. And that's what I did, what I set out to do. Now, then I learned about moving into the green zone, and I'm happy to kind of elaborate on that red, orange, green, but living in the orange is no cakewalk either. And that's where most people are living, where they're not obviously struggling. They can still function. A lot of them are highly functional people in their lives and have good jobs and make good livings and checking a lot of the boxes and social media life. Life's looking pretty good, but they're stressed and they're overwhelmed and they're mentally exhausted and they're burning out, and they might not be fully burnt out yet, but they're burning. And we don't want anybody living in the orange either. We got to move up to green, where we're healthy and fit and feeling great and showing up at our best and performing at our best and being great parents and partners and teammates and leaders. This is where people can be living, and I want to make sure people do.
Corey, I'll jump in and I'll echo Robin's sentiments that I think this is an important conversation. I'm glad we're having it. You said a couple of things. You said earlier on about rewiring. Mm-hmm. You used that term to rewire your brain or rewire your mental health. And we also talked about, again, stigma of mental health, that maybe it's improving, but it's still there.
Sure.
In your work, if you're dealing with companies, executives, teams where maybe this is an issue, I'm sure you still get some pushback on, maybe it's not that important, or there's not so much we can do, or, why is that our concern, or whatever. I'm sure you've heard a lot of pushback, because someone walks in with a broken leg, it's very obvious.
Yeah.
But someone walks in with depression, anxiety, stress, I'm sure, there's part of it as well. Are they just making that up? Is it real? Why is it our concern? How do you address that?
Yeah. And how about, again, most people aren't raising their hand and saying, I'm feeling this way, right?
Yeah.
So let's look at this from kind of two lenses, and really they're the same, but there's the personal and there's the business. So most of the leaders that we'll work with, most of the organizations that we'll work with, are led by people who genuinely care about their people. Yes, they care about their business, obviously, but they care about their people. I remember a leader I was working with, him and his leadership team last year. And the very first question I asked him is, what do you want for your people? This is before we started working together. And he said, I want my people to love their lives. I knew we were going to get along great. But he's smart. He understands that if they're loving their lives outside of work, they're bringing that to work. They're going to be more engaged and more productive and show up consistently. And there's so many parts about this. So here's where I think the business side of this comes in so much, because I get it. Everyone's asking about ROI and they're saying, these things aren't as important. So let's be very clear about this, that every single one of us has mental health. There's none of us who don't, just like we all have physical health. You can live in the red zone. It's a terrible place to live. You can live in the orange zone, which is where most people are living. But these people, again, like you described, they're stressed, they're anxious, they're overwhelmed, they're burning out. Again, not fully burnt out yet, but they're burning. And what they are really is normal. So they don't stand out. And they're saying they're fine, because if they say they're not fine, they might be stigmatized about it. But here's what's happening a lot in that orange zone, is that this is where so much of your disengagement and quiet quitting is happening. People genuinely want to do great work. And we found this over and over again. people genuinely want to do great work and they want to perform and they want to be great teammates and leaders, but they can't. You can't do that when you're burning out. You can't do that when you're not mentally healthy and fit. And so what's happening then is people are leaving companies. People more and more, and you guys, I'm sure, see this a ton in your work, is that people aren't willing to sacrifice their mental health anymore for their work. And so especially as the workforce turns over, right? More boomers are retiring, more millennials and Gen Z entering the workplace. And now that people are holding their mental health at par with salary, that's never happened before, but that's the new world. And so people are not willing to give that up. They want to do great work, but they also want to feel great doing it. Turnover in a company is so expensive. It is so expensive. It is so much more cost effective to retain people than it is to replace people. The disengagement and the lost productivity, the lost dollars and lost productivity are astronomical. Quite honestly, I don't know how a lot of companies are staying in business with how much they spend on turnover and how much they're losing in lost productivity with people who are in that orange zone. It's also impacting culture in a tremendous way. It's impacting your ability to recruit top talent. Because again, this is such a priority for people now. If you're not prioritizing my well-being, I'm not coming to work for you. And so the business argument for this is super strong. The ROI on mental health in general, the work that we do especially, is fantastic. Because you are improving your retention and your recruitment and your employee experience and your NPS scores. You're improving your culture. You're improving productivity and engagement. I could go on and on here. So for any leader who says, we don't see this as a problem, I don't know, should you be the one running your company? Should you be the one in charge of business decisions? Because this is very clearly a business decision. Unless your company is run entirely by robots, and as long as there are people involved in this, you want your people performing at their best. You want them showing up at their best. You want them doing that consistently. You want them being the kind of people that other people want to be around and then make other people better. I think every leader can close their eyes and picture the kind of person they want working there and the kind of leaders they want to be employing. And look, you're paying these people anyway. You hired them to show up and perform at their best. If they're not, it's costing you a ton of money. And it's no good to you if they perform in short sprints and then burn out. So that's the way the world's going. You can either bury your head in the sand and pretend it's not a real thing, and you will be playing a long and expensive game of catch up if that's the case. Or you can be leaders in the space and you can say, great, we want to be this kind of company. We want to be this organization. We are going to prioritize our people's mental health. We want them living their best lives at work and also at home. This is who we want to be. This is the culture we want to create. Those companies are going to recruit the best people. They're going to retain the best people. They're going to have the best cultures. They're going to have the greatest bottom lines. I think it's a no-brainer. I recognize that the learning curve takes time sometimes, but it's very much in motion.
I'm glad you brought up a lot of those points, and I agree 100% that bringing your best self to work is going to improve everything. And like you said, it is a no-brainer when you think about it and you put it in the terms that you just described. Why wouldn't every organization want their people showing up and being strong mentally?
Right?
Yeah.
Like if you were running a sports team, for example, wouldn't you want your people to be the best physically? Like you wouldn't accept it if they weren't physically fit. Your team would never win a game.
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think it's fair to say that the sports world probably has approached this from the mental fitness and psychology and being the best you can be, not just whether it's on the ice or on the court or on the field or whatever, right? But in the headspace as well, right? And they've been light years ahead from that perspective. So to bring it now into the workplace, it just makes sense.
It's no different. We're talking about people performing, right? You're in the world of professional sport. It's all about performance. And yeah, I mean, we talk so much about the physical attributes of these athletes, but it's such a mental game. And that's why you're seeing so much more of an investment in the mental side of it.
Corey, you mentioned and you gave a shout out to the CrossFit community, which again resonates with me because about 10 years ago, I joined my first CrossFit gym. And stayed with it for about 5 years. And full transparency, I'm not doing that anymore. But it will remain probably five of my favorite years in my fitness journey. Because to your point, I mean, they have done better than anyone in the gym industry, I would say, of creating culture, all walks of life, you're welcome. There's friendly competition. And they've created this community that is unparalleled. I haven't seen that anywhere else in the fitness industry. Mm-hmm. You made a point of giving that a shout out and referencing that. Is that something that you're building inside of these organizations through the mental gym, the companies that you work with?
I love that question. Yeah. And full transparency, I don't do CrossFit anymore either. For years I did and loved that experience of it. Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about the stigma of mental health. I think it is absolutely cool to be working on yourself, to be mentally healthy and fit, to be showing up at your best. And that is very much a CrossFit theme, is like, let's push ourselves to be better. And whoever you are and whatever you're doing, CrossFit people want to tell everybody that they're CrossFit people, right? Like, you know this, any conversation they want to bring up that they do CrossFit, because to them, it's like a badge of honor. And yeah, I absolutely want the mental gym to be the exact same thing. I want everybody within that company to be so proud that they are mental gym people, because these are your people too, who are your rock stars. They're either hidden gems who become your rock stars. They're your high potential people who become your top performers. These are the people who get promoted faster. They make more money. So it really is a badge of honor to, like, yeah, I go to the mental gym. The mental gym is not about, again, it's not therapy. It's not reactive care. It's not using reactive tools. It's all about moving forward, never backwards. We're always trying to move from good to great, and we're doing that together. I think it's a great thing in people's lives when they aspire to be better and they commit to being a better version of themselves. Yeah, I absolutely want that culture and that feel within companies, within teams, that we're mental gym people and we're proud of it.
Yeah, you're right. I can't imagine the number of people that heard me say that I was in CrossFit. Right? Of course, I had all the gear and the shirts and the right shoes and everything, right? Everybody knew. There was no question I was into CrossFit at the time. So I do applaud them for that. What does it look like? Because we're talking very high level here. What does it look like? Because I actually ran into, I had a discovery call with a company, wonderful person. I won't say her name. I don't want to out her in any way. But, and she made a point of bringing up something they were excited about was the mental gym. Corey, you know who I'm talking about. How does it work? So someone hears this podcast, says, oh my God, what a great idea. Of course, we're going to look into something like this. This is really important. We see there's going to be ROI. Corey sounds like a great person to talk to. What does it look like? How does it work? Just so people can get a sense of what this program entails.
Yeah. And I do believe I know who you're speaking about. And if I do, she is a wonderful person and leader. And I'm a huge fan of hers. If you're listening, big shout out to you. Everybody should have a leader like you. So what this is, again, it's like we're going to the gym for our minds. We're not lifting weights. We're not sweating. We're challenging you to think differently. We're doing it through meaningful conversation, no fluff conversation. We are building the essential mental tools and habits and skills and mindset for us to show up at our best. We do it a little bit at a time. We are not looking to make any big changes in anybody's life, any big sweeping changes, just to get those little incremental improvements. If we can make one small adjustment today and one small adjustment again next week and one small adjustment again the week after that, all of those adjustments compound into amazing results. So it's 1 hour once a week. It's a group call over Zoom led by your trainer. Your trainer is going to challenge you to think differently and teach you some concepts and engage in them in a very relatable way, a very relevant way, relevant to real life. We're very good at taking these super important kind of life-changing concepts and breaking them down into easy to understand parts and simple to integrate parts. That's a big part of it too, right? We got to be integrating it into real life, not just theorizing about it. And what we're doing is we're taking these concepts. If everybody worked on these concepts, if everybody could get a little bit better in some of these tools and some of these principles, the world would be a way, way better place. But what we're doing is we're speaking to who you want to be as a person and how you want to show up as a person at work, at home, in your life. So the energy in the gym is fantastic. It's a very real, honest place. There's no judgment. It's just a safe, inclusive space where we're working on ourselves together. We can discuss our challenges in trying to improve ourselves. We can discuss our wins. We're very big on wins. We do it at the beginning of every workout, hearing progress, achievements, accomplishments, things that people are proud of in their journey. And we do it with consistency. Again, it's 1 hour once a week. We do it with accountability because we want to be held accountable to being better versions of ourselves. We do it with guidance and we do it together. We're in it together. We show up for ourselves. We show up for each other. And what it is, it's really this necessary mental break that people get to take throughout their week. And let's face it, like, life is a lot right now. Like, we're kind of in unprecedented times. Life is a lot and it's heavy and people are balancing the very real demands of work and home and everyday life and just trying to keep up and stressed about finances and stressed about the state of the world and anxious about AI. And I could go on and on here. We need that mental break. And this is that 1 hour a week where they just get to block out the noise of everything else and focus on themselves and their well-being and their growth. And what it does is it sets you up for the rest of the week. You're ready to rock for the rest of the week. And it's also setting you up for your month and your year and your life. We're very much pointing in a direction of here's who we want to be and here's how we want to show up in life. And people just resonate with that. I will say we're not for everyone in that respect is that, you know, we talked about that scale from 1 to 10. Some people are absolutely fine being around a 5 in their life. And if you are, great. I mean, no judgment here. It's just the mental gym's probably not for you. If you're at a 5, 6, 7, even an 8, but you know that there's room to grow and you want to move up that scale, then we're absolutely for you. But yeah, the experiences is a fantastic one. It's really the kind of thing you have to experience to understand. I equate it to, I could tell you what it's like to love your kids, or I could tell you what it's like to eat your favorite meal, but you got to experience those things for yourself. Yeah, I think it's just a really great way to work on yourself, not only your mental health and fitness, but to grow personally and professionally. It's a really big component of what we're doing in the gym, is that personal and professional growth and leadership development and performance and that authentic human connection piece of it. So one thing I really love about that and really expedites people's growth too, is you kind of just don't have that filter, again, with that honest space. And so people get to connect in a way, in a really meaningful way, especially teams. It's not just about connecting as coworkers or as teammates. It's about human connection, connecting each other on a much deeper level. For anybody who's into DE&I and B, like, this is a game changer in that space, because it's really not about our differences. It's about what makes us the same. We have so much in common, but we don't talk about it because, again, we're projecting an image. We're trying to look good all the time. But when we just get to be real, people crave real. And when they get that real human experience and also get to better themselves week after week after week, it's amazing for them as individuals. It's amazing for them as teams and organizations. It's amazing for their families at home. On a larger scale, I certainly think it's amazing for the world.
What an amazing time we live in, because you talked about hosting these via Zoom. Mm-hmm. And with so many of, I know, our clients and our company included, we've got these distributed workforces.
Yeah.
We have people in different provinces, and a lot of our clients have people in the US and around the world. So the fact that you can bring them all together, I have heard people say, well, it's not the same as in person, but it is the next best thing, Corey. And,
yeah.
And we leaned into the podcast, and now we're recording via a different platform, but at the time we were using Zoom. And I was amazed. I questioned it a little bit, but I thought, I wonder if I can build the same types of relationships. And through the podcast, wonderful friendships that some of them I didn't meet until late last year. Al and I had a summer of doing patios, which was amazing to connect with so many people. And we've got that plan again for this spring to meet people. And the relationship that we created was so real and authentic that when we sat down with them in person, you just, you know, those friends you've had since you're 6 or 7 years old, you don't see them for 2 years and you just connect. That's what it was like.
Yeah.
So I totally get that you're able to create these experiences in the digital realm through your Zoom and bring people together. So I love the idea. I've seen it happen because I know you can connect with people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's nice to get people face to face, but that's not always possible, especially with, again, distributed workforces.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to give you credit for doing that and being able to, you know, lean into technology. And it's such a great time to be alive. If you watch the news and listen to people, you know, sometimes you think, oh my God, this is such a scary time to be alive. I prefer to think of it as maybe it's just a really great time to be alive, because the things that we have access to that we never had growing up. I know Al is itching, and I think we've already heard a lot of the answer, to be quite honest. But we do have Al's signature question that we'd love to throw at you. Again, I think you've probably answered it already, but maybe you have something else to add. I'm not sure.
I think you have a little bit. And actually, I wanted to ask another question before maybe we got to that. And we could probably talk about this for, you know, we could make this into a 2 or 3 hour conversation. I'll go back a little bit maybe to, again, comparing that physical fitness to mental fitness. You talked about red, green, and orange. And if I'm trying to get fit, you know, I can look at things like my BMI, and I can look at my heart rate, I can look at my weight, I can look at my VO2 max, I can look at a bunch of things that tell me I'm getting better physically. How do I know if I'm getting better mentally? Like, is it just I feel better? Or can you literally measure some things that say, you know what, I'm no longer a 5, I moved up to an 8, here's what I need to do to get to a 10?
Great question. We've become such a data-driven society that there are certainly, kind of Robin, to your point before with the technological advances, there are some great things to it, but I also think that there's some real drawbacks to it. I think some of the most important things in life are qualitative, not quantitative. For example, what's the data on the quality of your marriage or how much you love your kids, right? What's the data on happiness? There is some, but is that the most important thing, or is the most important thing, hey, I feel great? So I think both are important, and we do incorporate both into the mental gym. I will say this, when I went to CrossFit, certainly there are people who are keeping tabs on their scores and how much I'm lifting today and how fast am I doing it and all that. I wasn't into that. I was much more into the experience of, I know that when I go to CrossFit, I feel better, I feel stronger, I have more energy, I like my life more. My quality of life is just better. It's also great for your brain, right? Let's not lose sight of physical exercise being fantastic for your mental health. And so I look at mental health in a very, very similar way, because again, what we do isn't just about mental health. It's also about that growth as a person, as a leader, showing up at your best where it matters most, at work and at home. So we do have data, like we see, you know, on average in just the first 12 weeks in the gym, people typically experience a 44% reduction in burnout. That's just in 12 weeks. Those are numbers. Personally, I'm just as interested in having people say, wow, I just feel so much better. I'm thinking more clearly. I have way more energy. My relationships at home with my partner are amazing, with my kids are amazing. I'm a way better communicator with my team. We can share stats on productivity and engagement and all of these things, and they're fantastic. But these are the things that you notice. It's not like you notice one thing. At first, you'll notice one change, but that one change is going to be different for everybody. What people really start to notice is the changes are gradual, which I love. We'll often hear people say, you know, week to week, I didn't really notice that much of a change. But when I look back over a few months, like, holy crap, this is different. This is different. This is different. This is different. So yeah, data is great. And it's great to measure. But I think we lose a lot of what's most important when we're too focused on data or only focused on data. And we really want to incorporate the qualitative measurement of how are you feeling? Tell me what's better in your life. Like, how is it better? Why is it better? What's different? And when you hear these patterns of reports and stories over and over and over again with the data to back it up, it's exciting.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you shared that. It makes sense. And like you said, I'm glad you used the word qualitative in there versus quantitative, because mm-hmm. We get hung up so much on data. It's such a data-driven world these days, but there is that qualitative element in the background that's important too.
Mm-hmm. Just jumping in there, Al, I mean, it's how we measure the podcast as well. I mean, in the beginning, it was so important for us to look at the number of downloads. Mm-hmm. And over time, exactly as you said, Corey, I will pay much more attention to someone who reaches out and said, oh my God, I love that episode. Yeah, I resonated with Corey said this because I've been through a similar. That is much more meaningful and tells me, okay, we're reaching people, than how many downloads each episode. I will have a really good sense of how an episode will do either by the text message or the phone calls or the DMs I get. And sometimes those are really meaningful because you shared some vulnerable parts of your life today. And I know that will resonate with people and we'll get feedback on that. And that's how I measure. So yes, I agree. The numbers are good, but there's much more to it than that.
Yeah, we need both.
Well, I agree with Robin again that you probably already answered this question or largely. So maybe your answer won't be that much different, but we'll ask it anyway and see what you have to say. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you think you are planting?
Yeah, I love this question. This is so important because I think for a lot of us who are doing whatever we're doing because we believe it matters, it's meaningful work and is going to impact lives, we know, we hope that we don't get to see all the fruits of our work in our own lifetime, right? I hope it, you know, for my kids and their kids and their kids and their kids. I see a world where we are proactive with our mental health and well-being, where people are mentally healthy and fit, where it's not a rarity, where it's just normal. And reactive care will still exist. It will always exist, but it won't be that prevalent because it won't be that needed. And what we're doing here is with that, we're helping people live their best lives at work and at home, right? To be growing as people, to be growing as leaders. The shade, if you will, that I see is people being proud to be doing this, to have that 1 hour once a week. It's not just something they do. It's a part of their lifestyle. Just like anybody who exercises, however they exercise, right? There's so many ways to exercise. You just find a way that works for you. And this is the same thing here, that your option for mental health will be more than just therapy or using your EAP. You will have different ways and you just got to find the way that's right for you. And the important thing is just that you're doing it, that you are mentally healthy and fit, that you're showing up at your best, that you're living your best life at work and at home. And the more and more of us who do that, the greater ripple effect that we create, right? It doesn't just affect one life. Everybody has many, many people in their lives that they impact at work and at home and in your communities, leaders especially. Man, is there such an impact that you have and a ripple effect that you have? And so that ripple effect grows and grows and grows and grows, and the world just becomes a better place. Families become better, teams and organizations become better, communities and societies become better, and the world becomes better. And that's the tree that's planted. That's the tree that's growing. And at some point in my life, hopefully I got some time to go, I get to see more of that shade happening and more of that developing and more of this normalizing of it. I would love to see this in schools, quite frankly. I would love to see mental gym being just 1 hour once a week part of the high school curriculum. You're going to solve a lot of problems with that and also set up people for a much higher level of success in their lives, regardless of how you define success. yeah, that's where the movement is going. And hopefully that tree grows faster than even I expect it to.
We made a couple of great points there that I'm really glad you brought up. You know, you said, I see that this would just be normal.
Yeah.
Talking about mental health or addressing mental health would be normal. But, you know, you also said something that made me think that you're trying to do mental health 1 hour per week. How often do lots of people work out physically? 5 times a week? 7 every day? Why are we addressing mental health 1 day a week and physical health 7 days a week? Maybe when it's normal, like you say, maybe this will be something we do every day and we treat it the exact same way as we go to the gym.
I love that you said that. And yeah, for anybody who's into their physical health, you know, like you're making a commitment, but it's so worth it that you're doing it for a reason because the impact of it is so great on your life. But yeah, you're talking about going to the gym 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week, really paying attention to what you eat and how you eat it. What's so great about what we do in the mental gym is that 1 hour once a week, sure, we could be doing more, but what we're doing here is we're, again, because we're challenging you to think differently and build these tools and build the skills around using the tools, right? It's one thing to have a tool. It's quite another thing to actually practice using the tool and eventually achieve mastery in that tool. That takes practice and it takes integration. So what we do is that 1 hour once a week in the gym, now you're going out into your life and you are integrating these components, you're integrating these concepts and these principles and these tools into your life, into your real life. And so you're always kind of doing it, but you don't have to commit all of this time. Like this is one thing that I love, and people are busy in life. I'm busy. I got young boys and my wife's working. I'm got the mental gym, friends, family, like everybody's busy right now, but give us 1 hour once a week to this. And sure, in time, maybe we'll be doing it more and more, but I don't even know that we need to because that 1 hour is so impactful. And then again, how we integrate it into our lives in real life. And then we come back next week and we do it again. And we come back next week and we do it again. That 1 hour once a week is an absolute game changer. It's an absolute game changer. And so I get why some people don't want to commit to the life of physical exercise because it's a lot, even though, hey, I believe you should be doing it. Just somehow go for walks, do yoga. I don't care what you do. Just do something. But yeah, that 1 hour once a week in the mental gym is an absolute game changer. And I see no reason for people not to be doing that.
Well, I knew, as I said at the top of this podcast, I was about 30 seconds into a conversation with you. And I knew, number one, I like this person. I think we align on values. And number two, I think this is going to be a future guest on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your journey. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at the mental gym?
Yeah, guys, feeling is mutual. Thank you so much for having me on. Really, really enjoyed this. LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit. So feel free to connect with me there. Please connect with me there. I love meeting awesome people. And you check out the mental gym at www.mentalgymlife.com. Learn more about the mental gym, what we do. And if you want to come check it out for yourself, come check out a workout. Like I said, you got to experience it for yourself, for your team. We do demos for teams, for leaders, however you want to check it out. Come experience a workout in the mental gym. You can do that right on the website. Click the button, sign up, we'll make it happen.
All right. Thanks, Corey. Well, that does it for today's episode. As always, we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. As we've seen yet again, success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.